The Be Rad podcast is brought to you by MOFO, Male Optimization Formula with Organs to Boost Testosterone. Brad's Macadamia Masterpiece, mind-blowing nut butter blend now available on Amazon. Bala Enzyme, electrolyte and triple enzyme recovery drink mix. Paleo Valley, nutrient-rich, ancestral-inspired health products. By Optimizers, performance supplements like magnesium, probiotics, and more. And B-Rad Whey Protein Super Fuel, coming soon. Stay tuned for details. And please visit bradkearns.com to check out my personal selection of favorite products for health, fitness, and peak performance with great discounts for listeners. And here we go with the show.
In Chapter 5, Get Your Concerns Really Heard, you'll be able to use these responses and other examples as a starting point for using positive communication. And part of that is recognizing that we're human, that these reactions also happened to Mother Teresa and Mahatma Gandhi. Clarify that calling a timeout is not being disrespectful.
I want to talk about the best magnesium supplement from Bi Optimizers. Did you know that magnesium is believed to be one of the most widely deficient micronutrients, that it's involved in 600 different enzyme reactions in the body, and that 75% of modern citizens fail to get enough from their diets? This is due to depleted soil, missing the truly magnesium-rich foods, and stressful lifestyle patterns depleting magnesium levels. It's definitely one of the most important supplements, and Bi Optimizers has a sensational product called Magnesium Breakthrough, the only organic full-spectrum magnesium supplement that includes 7 unique forms of magnesium for stress relief and better sleep. Visit magbreakthrough.com/Brad, and you get an incredibly informative page on how the product will benefit you and the best ways to use it. You'll also save 10% on that page or by using the code BRAD10 at checkout. Try the product with a full money-back guarantee from Bi Optimizers. Visit magbreakthrough, magbreakthrough.com/Brad, or use the code BRAD10 at checkout. Hey, listeners, how about we learn how to stop arguing and engaging in stressful, destructive relationships? Enough already. The world's difficult enough to navigate every single day and all the challenges and problems that we face. At least we can be more civil, kind, open, listening, and understanding, especially with our closest relationships. And guess what? Those are the ones when emotions are most likely to come into the mix and screw things up and leave your skills in the dust and have the emotions take over. So I present an interesting, informative, and practically helpful conversation with a therapist by the name of Jerry Manny. And he wrote a wonderful new book called Why We Argue and How to Stop, A Therapist's Guide to Navigating Disagreements, Managing Emotions, and Creating Healthier Relationships. And you're going to love this guy. He's got a real gentle approach. He talks about he is still a work in progress himself, so he's not up there on the pedestal pointing his finger and telling you what to do. He's in the mix with us. He admits sometimes he doesn't know the exact best way to parent teenagers, but when you keep these skills in mind and get a nice refresher by reading the book and becoming more aware, I think you're really going to love it. And same with the conversation. It was helpful just to go through these things and learn about how self-care has to take the center stage before you can really contribute and interact optimally with others. He has a wonderful self-questionnaire that he describes where you get to fill in the blanks. So it's sort of an interactive book, and you get to learn more about yourself by just going through the exercise of asking these questions of yourself. You're going to learn some good practical takeaway tips like the importance of calling timeouts and the best way to do so, how to be brief and how important that is when you're in a difficult discussion. And you're going to learn some good phrases that keep people open and receptive, and then the trigger phrases that shut things down. A lot of fun. Jerry injects a sense of humor throughout the conversation and throughout the book. So please enjoy my conversation with Jerry Manny, the author of Why We Argue and How to Stop. Jerry Manny, thank you for joining me. We have an important topic to discuss. I can't wait. And it's centered around your new book, Why We Argue and How to Stop, A Therapist's Guide to Navigating Disagreements, Managing Emotions, and Creating Healthier Relationships. Great title. I love it.
Thanks for having me here, Brad.
Oh, sure. Sure. It's an important topic. And the thing you said right before we started recording seems to be we're going to cut right to the heart of it. And it's also in the subtitle where your emotions are in the mix when the argument begins. And that's when your skills go out the window, huh?
Absolutely. And John Gottman in his work talks a lot about that, too. Although his work, which he says is heavily researched, focuses mainly on couples. I've also focused my work in any type of relationship. When our emotions start to escalate, things can go south real quickly. And so that's a major part of the book, as well as using these tools in a variety of relationships. It could be with a spouse, partner. It can be with other relatives. It can be with your kids, your teenagers, your parents, your coworkers, your ex, who is also the parent of your children. And what I've often said, it's one thing to divorce a spouse, but when you have children, you need at some point to have some communication. So that's also what I put in my book as well.
Well, it seems to me it all goes hand in hand. Like, you can't be this wonderful a partner or parent, and then you're a jerk in the workplace, and you're going around ignoring these supposed skills. So you either have it and you apply it to everywhere, especially the most difficult relationships, I think, is the place where maybe you can have the most growth.
That's an interesting point. When things I think of a couple things, certainly for those people closest to us, but also nowadays with the stresses and strains, with social media, which I talk about in my book, we can get into arguments with perfect strangers at any given moment.
It feels like we wire these patterns and we somehow thrive on it, even though we might, complain about another argument that we got into at the store today when they asked me to wear a mask, or it told me to take my mask off, whatever the argument's about. And then it starts to become, habitual and routine. And I'd love to go through some of the checkpoints in your book about how people can kind of wake up and have, a less argumentative life.
Thank you. What I don't talk about in my book is any secrets. There are no secrets. It's being human. It's recognizing that. So where would we start? We start with emotions. We start with ourselves and catching ourselves. That's one of the first chapters. Well, actually, let's start with the first chapter. Why do we argue self-questionnaire? And I list a number of those questions. So maybe we can go over some of them here.
Sure.
Because I think that's actually one of the keys. And this list is not a be-all and tell-all. And I'm sure other people can add things to it. But from there, we build on a number of strategies and tools, and I'll come back to that in a moment. But these are some of the questions that I put in there. So why do we argue? Some people say it's most often about money, purchases, housework, dirty dishes, soiled clothes on the floor, or strong disagreements about politics, religious, or personal issues. But those are what people argue about and not why we argue. So then I made a list of what we actually argue about. And here are some possibilities. That we take a disagreement personally. That is, we infer that the other person thinks not only is our opinion wrong, but that you are wrong. Or that you think if you disagree with someone, one of you must be right and the other must be wrong. Nothing in between. You believe you're right, the other person is wrong, and that you can change their mind. You want to change, they want you to change, and neither of you feel the other person is listening or taking responsibility for the conflict. So we go on to a number of these, and I think there's like 15 or something. I've lost track, to be honest with you. But what I go on to say is that what all of these things have in common is about trying to change the other person's thinking or behavior.
Hmm.
And what's the result? Pushback from the other person.
Hmm.
Not to mention, as I start reading those things, I don't know about you, but my chest starts getting tighter, my voice gets louder, I get more animated. So that's what I start the book with. And then from there, we take the reader into picking which of these is more relevant for them.
Mm.
And that's a lot of what I try to design the book to be about, is to make this a tool for meaningful change from the very beginning. So for some examples, when I feel hurt, this is one of the questions. I may feel like retaliating. Then a person can insert their pattern. I tend to do this with, what's the name of the person in the relationship? And so, yeah, I get a lot of smiles from people as we get into this, okay, relating with this. And I would like to insert your goal. So we do this with each of these questions. And if it doesn't apply, fine. My thought is, isn't it enough that we as human beings struggle with our emotions, which are the great blessings and the challenges of being human?
Mm.
Sometimes I will argue to prove a point. This usually results in, insert your usual outcome. I tend to do this with the name of the person in the relationship. I would like to insert your goal. Mm. So with each of these questions, this is the scenario there. Okay. As we get proceed with the why I argue self-questionnaire, following that, it states in chapter 5, get your concerns really heard. You'll be able to use these responses and other examples as a starting point for using positive communication. I've adapted Dr. Robert Myers, a behavioral psychologist, his 7 guidelines for positive communication. He developed this a number of years ago, and it's heavily researched, not only by Bob Myers, but by other researchers as well. In developing the CRAFT model, C-R-A-F-T. CRAFT stands for Community Reinforcement Approach Family Training, and it's been developed very effectively to help family and friends who are concerned about someone else's alcohol or drug use. And this approach has been helpful and in the I'm trying to think of the statistics. I have it in the very beginning of the book. 70% of the time in influencing, not forcing, influencing effective change in a loved one, as well as reducing stress, anxiety, depression in the person using this, improving communication. But I had received Bob Myers' permission to adapt this to more everyday relationships. I was trained by Bob Myers back in 2009 as part of a federal grant in the supervisory position in the child and family agency I was working in Massachusetts. Only nine of us in four agencies spread out throughout the country spent 3 days with him in Bloomington, Illinois. It was a great opportunity to be trained in this approach. And during one of the follow-up conference calls every other Friday, we met, not through Zoom back then, which we're all very familiar with now, but we did this through audio conference calls. I mentioned to Bob that I was also using these approaches with other clients where there were no substances involved. And I asked if there was another book that I could be using, and he wasn't aware of any. So that planted the seed.
There you go.
For my book.
Right. So these crisis situations that the professionals have created a protocol for, now you're taking these to everyday arguing and in all the parameters you mentioned. And when you were talking about that self-questionnaire, it also occurred to me, you know, as you're asking that breakout question, why do I argue? You might also ask, why do I need to change people's minds? Why do I need them to come to my side? And so it seemed like a double whammy right out of the gate to go, wow, you know, what am I doing? Why does everyone have to think in the same manner or have the same opinion as I? And then when they don't, then your emotions get rankled. And it seems like that's putting us at the center of the universe in a pretty a weak position that it's never going to really, it's a losing battle to go around and try to change everyone's mind to align with your thinking on everything.
That's a great point. My first reaction was, I resemble that remark.
Well, I like that. I mean, that's funny. And it's also, it stings because we know if we all look at ourselves deep down, this is this kind of strong human inclination to convince people to line up with you. And I'm especially calling myself out here because I'm a thought influencer and I promote health and fitness. And so I'm really enthusiastic about engaging with people and saying, hey, you know, those sodas that you're cranking all day, you might want to think about a change in habit and not drink those. And here's why. And let me go off onto my riff now so I can convince you to change your life. And it's like, I've learned over time that I have to pick my battles. In other words, I have to wait patiently until people are open and receptive to my message rather than knocking on doors and saying, hey, I just have this great book. It's going to change your life. Here, let me stick it in your face and beg you to read it and hound you and cajole you. And that's a huge waste of energy. And so there it becomes kind of delicate when, especially when you have those close relationships, like you say, in the workplace, family, friends, loved ones, kids, you really, really are invested in having things line up nicely and having people come along with your point of view. And that's when we get into trouble.
Yeah, well said. It's also why I intentionally add some humor in the book. Part of that is to break some of the tension for a serious discussion, but it's also as a teaching tool as well. I looked at your website and about you having been a outstanding triathlete. My oldest daughter's boyfriend will be running in the Boston Marathon for the 16th time a week from today.
Wow.
I'm a master's level therapist, but my undergraduate degree is in health and education, health and physical education.
Mm-hmm.
So I also have an interest in people, not just emotionally and behaviorally, but also in their physical health. I've worked in hospital settings for over 20 years. My oldest daughter and my wife are essential workers. They work in the healthcare field. So I hear you loud and clear. Chapter 3 is called Try Different, Not Harder. Okay. Many of us, when we're kids, we're brought up with a lot of sayings, and many of them have served us well over the years. Try to put yourself in someone else's place, or if at first you don't succeed, try again. But many times of trying different, and that's a lot of what I try to look at in my book. If everyone just got their, I'm trying to choose my words carefully here, but their darn act together, then I'd be fine. And I think that's part of being human. I think that's just part of being human, okay? And that each of us have our own story, which we don't know. We don't know, even when we're trying to truly listen to someone else, and we project our own thoughts and feelings. I use this example in the book about another thing that many of us were brought up as children, which in many ways is very helpful. Try to put yourself in someone else's place. It's one of the most important ways that we become social beings, but there's limitations to that, okay? And I think the example I use is that I can say to people that I was one of the earlier stay-at-home parents when my first daughter was born. And so I have some of that experience for her first 2 years of being home. My wife went back to work, and it was one of the best decisions I ever made, except for the first time I had to give her a bath by myself. And I used Ivory soap, laundry detergent instead of laundry detergent instead of soap. And she wound up getting a significant rash. But I learned from that, okay? However, that was a long time ago. And so some of my memory may not be accurate, and some things aren't the same anymore. But also, if I was talking to a mother, I would be putting my own male experiences and perceptions into that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that they're not valid, providing that I am aware that I have some male biases. But even if I was talking to another father, I don't know how someone else thinks and feels. So if I really want to know that, I need to ask.
So we have a starting point of bias, and I think a lot of times we aren't aware of it. We just have our position, and we don't have that perspective that maybe someone is looking at things completely differently. Whatever the issue is, politics, the quarantine, the way that household chores are separated, or in the case of a parent and a child, of course, the perspective is going to be dramatically different. And the parent, of course, knows more than the kid, and their way is the right way. And they're going to have to explain that. And that usually is a recipe for conflict.
Yeah, except with teenagers. Teenagers know more than we do.
Right. I mean, there's the inherent disagreement there that, and I'm kind of being funny when I say, of course, the parent knows more than the kid, but I think parents believe that. And
sure.
We know what's good for our kids more than they do. But I'm, you know, now my kids are 24 and 22, and we relate some funny stories from the past where, you know, I'd bring out all my parenting skills and, you know, step up to my son because he, you know, broke the rules. And I said, why did you lie to me? And he said, oh, because you weren't going to let me if I didn't. And I'm like, wow, good point, you know. And it's like, okay, from now on, if you're going to stay out late, just tell me the truth, and we'll work it out. But it was a turning point moment because I was dealing with a kid who was a good kid; he wasn't any trouble. And one night he stayed out late, and him and his friend made up a story and bounced it off each. You know, oh, I'm over at this kid's house, and that kid told his mom he's over at our house, and then I talked to the mom, and of course everything blew up. But you know, you can't control everything in life. And I think this is getting back to the origination of the arguments is that desire to have everything bend to your will and your way of your beliefs.
Another excellent point. It's one thing to talk about a spouse, a partner, a coworker, someone else who might have different beliefs. But when we're talking about our own kids, now we ramp up the emotions. Hmm. And when they say, well, you don't remember what it's like, things are different. Part of that is true, but part of it is we do remember, and it can scare the hell out of us. But I think you bring up a really a good point about communication, back and forth communication, and thanking someone for being honest.
So these emotions come into the mix and screw things up. Like you have your skills, you've read so many books, you're ready for your next argument, you listen to the podcast. And all this thing is, you're all set to face the battles of the world. And then when the emotions come into the mix, your skills kind of vanish temporarily. And I guess that's coming out of the stress hormones. You're not thinking rationally. Let's talk about how and why this happens. I'm going to guess that the how is that the relationships that mean the most to you are also the most difficult to navigate emotionally, because you have so much writing on it. Like, I don't care if the person at the supermarket wants to argue about sports or quarantine or politics, and they can be complete wackos and I'll smile and carry on with my day. But if I'm getting into it with a family member, a loved one, boy, those things are going to really, they're really going to get you riled up.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, what I put in the book is if someone, if a complete stranger had said to me, the earth is flat, I probably would just slough that off.
Where's the edge? How interesting.
Yeah. And not get to.
Is there a waterfall we could see at the edge? Yeah.
Oh, watch your step.
Yeah.
Not get into a discussion on that. But if someone made a comment about me putting on weight in my gut or something else like that, that might trigger an emotional reaction if it's someone close to me,
mm-hmm.
because of the emotions involved, or it hits a nerve. And part of that is recognizing that we're human. That these reactions also happen to Mother Teresa and Mahatma Gandhi, and to be able to forgive ourselves, to learn from it, to acknowledge it, and that's part of communication. and not be perfect about that.
Hmm.
This opens up a whole nother area there. But I guess this would be one of the things that I would emphasize. And this would be the part of the book that deals with self-care. Okay. Taking care of ourselves is so important. And it's not being selfish. I differentiate between that. Self-care is the first instinct of all living organisms. It's I come first, because if I don't take care of myself, I'm not going to be helpful to anyone else, especially those closer to me. And selfishness is I come first, second, and always. There's a difference. There's a big difference. And that's more of a challenge, I think, especially for those of us who are parents. Because the instinct is we'd lay ourselves down for our kids. We'd take a bullet for them. But the importance here of also self-care is setting an example for our children as well. It's not just talking about it, but it's setting that example. And it's not easy. I don't know how to do that, and I don't put that in the book. Here are five easy steps for anything, because I don't know how to do that, and I don't pretend to. So what happens when we make mistakes? I talk about that, okay? And recognizing that, to be able to forgive ourselves, to be able to make apologies. I talk about letting go of guilt, letting go of anger. I got a lot of experience with that.
Yeah, I suppose if you're kind of incapable of doing that, you're going to repeat these patterns. And so even the guilt and feeling bad because you lost your temper in the most recent argument, and you're terribly sorry, and you say sorry 20 times, and you feel so guilty, and you feel bad about yourself. It occurs to me that it's sort of a setup to do it again, and then be really super sorry again, and then feel guilty again. And this also plays out in all kinds of different behavior goals, like trying to achieve dietary transformation, and you only made it on your diet for 4 days, and then you binged on Ben and Jerry's, and you feel terrible and guilty, and you're a worthless person. And so you don't even deserve to get the success you dreamed about. So let's forget the whole thing and just go get some more, self-destructive behaviors. I don't know, does that apply to kind of carrying around guilt from being emotional and unreasonable in arguments?
Well, guilt can come from a lot of different things. Part of that can be learned. But it also could be unlearned. I quote Dr. Harold Kushner, who wrote the book When Bad Things Happen to Good People. He talks about part of when I hesitate is that I don't have the type of memory that I can quote people word for word. Okay. And I do that whether it's about the book or when I'm as a therapist, when I'm reflecting back with one of my clients, I will say that to them. I'm hesitating here because I know that I can't repeat exactly what you said now or a couple weeks ago. So I want them to know. Okay. I also sometimes break that with a little humor by saying, I'm not deep in thought right now. Okay. And that although I might look like a stereotypical therapist, I often say that I look smarter than I am. Then they laugh and it breaks some more of the tension. Harold Kushner talks about that excessive guilt can be counterproductive. And so I talk about that in the book, about letting go of excessive guilt. And then at times that someone might use the term, I'm sorry, when it might be that, I didn't realize that seat was taken. That it's not necessarily that apologizing isn't necessarily appropriate. So part of learning more effective communication skills is use of appropriate words. But also overusing the term I'm sorry when an apology is not appropriate weakens the phrase. Okay. What I also talk about in the next to the last chapter is that no self-book can cover every topic and every problem. And there are a lot of things that can impact relationships. And so one of the things that also makes my book different is the next to the last chapter, what to do when you need more help. So I talk about some of the most common issues that may need more help, specific types of anxiety disorders, depression, substance use disorders, and some others. So guilt can be tied in with certain anxiety disorders or depression. And this doesn't get commonly dealt with many other self-help books. And yet it can be something that is either contributing to, directly or indirectly, to relationship struggles. These are just some different examples. I mean, any one of these things can be a topic in itself. And guilt, huge topic.
Sure. I like those other skill suggestions that are peppered throughout the book. So maybe we can give the listeners some additional practical tips or things to think about. One of them is the timeouts, which you spend some good time on. And it's a great suggestion, but I sometimes find, especially when the emotions are involved, it's difficult to take a timeout. So how can we get better at that? And how do we utilize timeouts to their best success?
Well, we've been talking about communication and how important that is. But there are times when it's best not to talk. And that's when one or more people, when emotions are escalating. And so very early in the book, I talk about the some guidelines for calling a timeout.
I guess noticing either in yourself or the other person. And I would say, if you notice that the other person's getting too heated, you choose your words very carefully. And you talked about that in another chapter about the proper choice of words. But I know that's can escalate things if you make these sort of condescending statements like, well, you seem too worked up right now and emotional, so let's talk later. What the hell are you talking about? You're the one that's, you got to be careful calling it out. Even if you seem like you're in your wise mind and you've decided you want to talk later, it sometimes can, just fuel more flame for that fire. Even if there is a break, you're going to come back and it's still going to get heated because of all the nonsense that you, you did to initiate the timeout.
If anybody heard me laughing in reaction to your comment, is I'm identifying with it. Okay. I'm identifying with it.
Oh, here goes Mr. Therapist telling us to calm down.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. And Absolutely. So some seven guidelines for calling a timeout. And it's important to have a discussion about these guidelines before you call a timeout for exactly the same reason. Okay. And it could be to even hand someone that. And I put these guidelines in my website, jerrymanny.com, where people can download that. They can print that out. They can print out the Why I Argue self-questionnaire. These are some things I could actually print out, download from my website.
Nice.
So they can make that more user-friendly. But very briefly, the 7 points of about a timeout is that anyone, a spouse, partner, teenagers, kids, adults, coworkers, can call a timeout if they feel that they are about to lose their temper or objectivity and perhaps say things that they may regret later. Been there, done that myself a number of times. Okay. Also, someone may call a timeout if they think the other person is losing or about to lose their temper. Okay. And then the second point is clarify that calling a timeout is not being disrespectful, providing you don't overuse this, you know, call a timeout too often, and that you will attempt to discuss the issue constructively within a reasonable time period. A timeout is actually about respecting yourself and each other and recognizing that when emotions begin to flare, taking time to regain your composure can help strengthen and nurture the relationship, whether it's a family member, friend, coworker, or anyone else. A brief statement such as, let's talk about this later, or after lunch or tomorrow, can help reassure the other person that you're serious about resuming the discussion. However, and this touches on what you brought up, Brad, when your emotions are escalating, any attempts to explain why you don't want to continue talking will likely further the argument because you never listened to me anyway. Okay? And mom always liked you best. I ad-libbed that. That's not in the book.
Right. You could just perhaps every time take ownership of it yourself and say, you know, I'm getting emotional. I'm really tired, whatever it is, but never projecting to the other, like, You're going off the rails again, and I refuse to speak to people who raise their voice. All that stuff's going to get the voice raised even further, it seems like.
Absolutely. And these are just guidelines. People can adapt this and use what works best for them, just like you mentioned.
Why is it so important and valuable to be brief when it's time to argue or to get into a difficult communication?
Because we're human. Because we're human. And sometimes less is better. So a couple more of the guidelines. When someone calls a timeout, the other person does not have to agree with the timing of the timeout. Once a timeout is called, this is another important point, the other parties need to separate themselves physically in a manner that is as respectful as possible. This may seem awkward at first, but if you stay in the same room, you're looking at me that way. I know what you're thinking. And here we go again.
Yep, there might be some pot shots.
That's not you.
There might be some under the breath comments. Who knows what's going to happen in that room?
You're breathing the wrong way. Okay. Any brief, respectful phrase can be used in place of the term timeout. It doesn't matter. Okay. And a reasonable period of time can be flexible. It could be a few minutes. It could be hours, or perhaps a few days. Those are just some things there. And then from there, and there's not time, I think, to get into this now, but I go into in the book. Some other frequently asked questions about a timeout, that as I've used this with clients and in trainings that I've done over the years, what to do if it has no effect? Do we both have to agree? Not just at the moment, but we have this discussion ahead of time and someone says, no, I don't want to do that. We go into this about some of these common questions and things like that. But this has been one of the more effective ways of preventing emotions from escalating, is calling a timeout, even if it's for a few minutes. And sometimes people can do this without even using the phrase. And the other thing that can happen is that someone else can call a timeout, and then you think to yourself, damn it, they're using my idea. I don't want to call a timeout. And that's okay. That's okay. Someone needs to be the first one to get off what I call the not so merry-go-round of arguing and argument and preventing things from getting worse and hurt feelings and hurt people hurting each other. And then from there, we can build more progress little by little. It takes time. This ain't easy. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to make this easy, but we can do these things.
Right. So give ourselves a break if we've had some conflict to this point in our life and increase our awareness. That's what I enjoy about reading the book. I mean, it can't hurt you, people, right? It's just reminders. And even if the things you're nodding your head, you already know it, you're such an expert. It's just the exercise of bringing more awareness into it is so valuable, and just keeping these reminders going. And then learning some new skills, of course, is great. And I also like how you suggest, do's and don'ts with certain phrases. There's trigger phrases, and then there's phrases that are welcoming and opening and getting people more likely to listen to you. Can you give a couple suggestions in that area?
Well, this is where Chapter 5 comes in with adapting Bob Myers' evidence-based practices of using the guidelines for positive communication. There's a lot of research behind this, and I've adapted his approach so that we can get our concerns really heard and considered. It also helps to create a foundation for respectful communication. And the seven guidelines are, first of all, being brief. So think what I say, KISS, K-I-S-S, keep it simple, sweetheart. More is not always better, especially when emotions may be running high or have the potential to escalate. Once you get into a long explanation, we often end up repeating our point or introducing additional concerns and example, and then it gets examples, and it gets hard to follow all these things. The second guideline of positive communication is being positive. And Dr. Myers would say that instead of saying, bring up what you don't want to have happen, say what you do want to. And the way I frame this in the book to make this a interactive way is to give a prior confrontational attempt. I can't stand it when you show up 45 minutes late and make me worried sick. These are just some examples. So the progress example would be progress being positive, non-confrontational, respectful. I get worried when you are very late and I don't know where you are. I would appreciate it if you would call or text and let me know when you're going to be very late. Thank you. So instead of what I don't like, this is what I would like you to do.
I feel so relaxed and at peace when you're on time. It's so awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, different ways that you might communicate depending on who the person is and your relationship with them. Another example would be prior confrontational attempt. Don't tell me what I should or shouldn't do. And progress in being positive, non-confrontational, and respectful. I appreciate your feedback and as I value your opinions. I find I'm more open to comments when they're presented in the form of ideas or suggestions.
Oh my gosh, that's great. I love it.
Okay. So now person can then plug in their own examples of what they've tried before that was unsatisfactory in their own opinion, and then they could practice each of these. Another one of the seven guidelines of positive communication is being specific, referring to a specific concern rather than making a broad statement like you don't appreciate me, or you never, or you always. Okay,
that'll shut you down right away as soon as the sentence starts.
Yeah,
honestly, yeah, and then the person will be formulating a rebuttal. Justifiably so, if you tell me I never blank, that it's almost impossible for the person to sit back and say, oh, thanks for the helpful feedback. They're going to find out the times that they countered that, and then you're going into argument alley.
Exactly. So positive communication is not only getting our concerns heard, but saying it in a way that people are going to be less likely to be defensive and be more open-minded. So be specific. Refer to a specific concern rather than a broad statement is likely to result in more effective discussions and responses.
Yeah, I guess even if it's the 10th time that you're calling me out on this, I probably already know it anyway. I don't really need to hear that it's the 10th time. But if you say, hey, you left your wet towel on the floor, can you pick it up? That person, if the feedback is delivered in a kind and loving and strategic manner, that person might even be the one to volunteer, oh gosh, I seem to do this all the time. Sorry, let me pick it up. But if you start out with, sure, you know, the scoreboard, that's the 12th time in the last 33 days. I just want to know because I have a little chart here. I can prove it to you. Boy, oh boy, that doesn't come across too well.
So here's an example. Prior broad statement attempt. Things have got to change around here and change fast. Progress in referring to a specific concern. This is someone saying this to themselves. I need to call a timeout and simmer down before I lose it big time. So they go for a walk or do some other types of self-care and some other things like that. And so then they ask the person to pick a time. Another specific example, guidelines is label your emotions. Other people are more likely to acknowledge your emotions more open-mindedly and empathize with you when you present your concerns calmly and without blame. Okay. So I'm skipping through some of this because I know we're running out of time, Brad.
Great tips. Really good. We're on a big finish here, people. If you could just remember some of these things and put them into practice, I think it could be transformative. I really do.
Okay. And let me just finish this point. And then I list, this is probably more for us guys than for women who are more in touch with their feelings. But then I list, this is a partial list of feeling words. So I have uncomfortable emotions like being afraid, aggravated, angry. Pleasant words like amazed, at ease, calm, and things like that. Just to help us guys here who are more likely to say, well, I feel bad or I feel good. Well, that's a start. But as we're more specific in labeling our emotions, it can be more helpful for someone else to understand. And some examples in labeling emotions, the prior attempt without labeling, I feel that this is unfair. That's a statement that's not a feeling. That's an opinion.
Mm.
Okay. Progress in labeling your emotions calmly without judgment or blame. I feel angry and frustrated because this seems unfair to me.
Ah, there you go.
Okay.
So I feel like you're an idiot is not really an accurate emotion. We have to go and be more clear. People might misinterpret that.
Yeah. And I do have an example here, but we're running out of time, about dirty dishes and laundry on the floor and how to reword that. But, you know, I try to use a lot of common examples. But again, people then, each of these, the readers plug in their own examples. They also encourage to go back to their Why Argue Self questionnaire, to go back to what they put in there and pull out some of them as well. Mm. So the book is designed to be very reader friendly and interactive.
Yeah, well. I love that. Anytime that's in a book, and just again, merely going through the exercise and noticing how you fill in those blanks can be illuminating if you do it in an honest manner, especially, and realize that you know, you might be stuck in your own point of view so strongly, and as soon as you put the pen to paper, it looks kind of silly when you put those answers in, but it's a great process for growth.
I see it as being human.
Yeah,
and that's why I add some humor in there at times.
You're not a mean guy, Jerry. You keep giving us a break because we're human. I love it.
We're
just human, people.
Because if you talk to family members, I'm a work in progress. That's why I share earlier in the book that I've been a longtime member of a 12-step program for families of alcoholics.
Mm-hmm.
And there you'll see, you know, here on the Zoom here, it says Jerry M, because when I'm at my virtual meeting right now, I don't have my last name, because we're all there equally. When I'm seeing my clients virtually now through doxy.me, which is HIPAA compliant virtual, then I have my full name. But
love
I'm
it.
Just there as Jerry M, because I'm still a work in progress myself. I have to apply these same things that we're talking about, because it's easier being on your podcast talking with you, that I have to catch myself so I don't react. But I'm much better at it. But I
very
have
nice.
I have to be vigilant.
Jerry Manny, people. What a great show. I appreciate this ending too, giving us all some perspective. We're just a work in progress, even the author of the book. So go pick up the book. It's all over. It's called Why We Argue and How to Stop. And tell us your website again, where we can get those free questionnaires to download and things.
I try to keep it simple, jerrymanny.com. And thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And I enjoyed talking with you, Brad.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Jerry Manny. Da, 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 da. Hey, listeners, I discovered an awesome new electrolyte and triple enzyme powdered drink that's going to knock your socks off. It's called Bala Enzyme, and it comes in a convenient little pouch of bright orange powder that you pour into water for the ultimate electrolyte and antioxidant drink. It's simple, convenient, and yes, the orange tint comes from a potent serving of turmeric, along with a clean and diverse assortment of enzymes and electrolytes, and a perfect taste that's not fake or too sweet. Bala was created by husband and wife doctors to help their patients recover from inflammation, improve hydration, speed up recovery, even relieve joint pain, improve digestion, and boost immunity. I love their incredible devotion to product quality. There's a lot of research behind it. And I just sprinkle this packet into ice water, and it's so easy to stay hydrated because you absolutely enjoy the taste of the drink. Get their convenient little packets. They even designed it with the tear half torn, so it's easy to open into the water. I love what they think of. And it comes in three exciting flavors: pineapple, lime, and berry. It's so potent, it might stain your fingers if you get it on your fingers. And yes, that's a good thing for a serving of turmeric that's that potent. It's also sugar-free, zero carb, and promoting of the three R's: rehydrate, relieve, and revive, please visit BalaEnzyme.com, BalaEnzyme. And of course, there's a special deal for BRAD podcast listeners, 30% off your first order. Just use the code BRAD30 at BalaEnzyme.com. Thank you for listening to the show. I love sharing the experience with you and greatly appreciate your support. Please email podcast@bradventures.com with feedback, suggestions, and questions for the Q&A shows. Subscribe to our email list at bradkearns.com for a weekly blast about the published episodes and a wonderful bi-monthly newsletter edition with informative articles and practical tips for all aspects of healthy living. You can also download several awesome free ebooks when you subscribe to the email list. And if you could go to the trouble to leave a 5 or 5-star review with Apple Podcasts or wherever else you listen to the shows, that would be super incredibly awesome. It helps raise the profile of the BRAD podcast and attract new listeners. And did you know that you can share a show with a friend or loved one by just hitting a few buttons in your player and firing off a text message? My awesome podcast player called Overcast allows you to actually record a soundbite excerpt from the episode you're listening to and fire it off with a quick text message. Thank you so much for spreading the word. And remember, be rad.